Support for the Weird Homes podcast comes from the Austin Energy Solar Education and Rebate Program, providing solar rebates and education for Austin residents and giving you the knowledge you need to have a positive solar shopping experience. If you've been thinking about going solar, now through August, you can earn the most from your Austin Energy Solar Rebate, a total of $3,500. Learn more at austinenergy.com/go/solar101.
Hi, this is David J. Neff, and you're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Have you ever walked through your neighborhood, taken a look at a strange or weird home, and wondered, who lives there? What's inside of that home? Well, I think as human beings, we've all have done that. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to explore the weird and strange world of the people who live in those homes. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Weird Homes Podcast. This is David J. Neff. Today we have one of my favorite new Austin homeowners joining us to talk about art, inspiration, her home, putting on lipstick when you are speaking on public radio, all sorts of fun and interesting tidbits. So why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Katie Nail, like hammer and nail. And I have lived in Austin 40 years, came from the coast, Houston and Galveston, and never looked back. So I'm an Austinite now.
Love it. And let's go back. Let's go back. Where were you born?
I was born in Houston, and my parents were West Texans, and my father an engineer, although probably born an artist, and my mother wasn't an artist.
And so talk to me about your dad. Engineer, but you say he maybe was born an artist and he didn't know it. No one ever told him.
Well, he knew it. And when he was two, he started drawing birds in flight from different angles. And this was in the 1920s. So he knew, but his father died when he was six and he was very poor. And he couldn't handle the insecurity of being an artist, let me tell you. So he became an engineer. And he was good at that, too. But he was truly talented as a draftsman and could have just done anything with it. But, you know, I came along and I wasn't afraid of being poor. I didn't know any better.
Tell me about your mom. So your mom was always an artist?
Well, she was. And she studied journalism. She was from a moderately poor family. And they were readers. They were huge readers. And so she was artistic and became a painter. And when I was a little girl, she went to the museum school in Houston and became a really fine abstract painter in that art world. So I grew up with all the Houston artists, the really good ones.
Yeah.
And I was in their studios and I didn't know anything else. In fact, I thought everybody's mother was an artist until I was like 16. I started looking around going, oh, wait a minute. This is kind of a weird thing to do. So I was around a lot of what was modern at the time. Modern art.
And talk to me a little bit about that too, because I think as kids, so much influenced by our parents, whether we admit it or not, good and bad. Were you one of those kids who's like, ugh, I'm so tired of all this. I don't want to be involved in art. I want to go do the complete opposite. Or were you growing up being like, this is fascinating and cool, and I'm in the middle of this like modern art scene? Which way did you kind of go as a kid?
I think that my mother was so smart. She left me alone. She let me work in her studio, but she never taught me one thing. She would show, here's my oil paints. Don't get it on you. And she didn't make a big deal about it. And I started painting quite really, frankly, wonderful animal paintings when I was 7 or 8, and portraits of people, because they left me alone. And I loved doing, I was either playing outside and riding my bicycle out of Houston. No one ever knew where I was, or I was home drawing. And so, no, I her friends were cool. I mean, it was fascinating. So I never would have rebelled to get away from it. It was just natural, like breathing. And then my father was worried about me. He said, don't you want to study something else, like architecture? And I said, no. Besides, you hate architects. So why would I do that? So I said, no. He was worried I would be poor. I said, no, it's okay. It's okay. So I did it, you know. I always did it.
So it sounds like a natural born talent there emerged. And then did you go to art school in high school or the university? Did you ever have formal kind of art school training?
Yes, I did. I was only 17 and I accidentally graduated early from high school. I didn't mean to. And they said, oh, you're finished. Get out. And it was in, like, I went to high school on January 3rd and started college January 4th.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was young, and my mother said, well, I know this Houston sculptor, Charles Pebworth. He teaches up in Huntsville at Sam Houston. They have a nice small art department. Just go there till you're 18.
Hmm.
And I loved it there. And it was the National Forest, and we hung out with all our professors in
wow.
their homes.
Wow.
In fact, I just went to Charles Pebworth's 92nd birthday.
Oh, wow.
In Arkansas. And he hadn't seen me in a long time. And it was just fabulous. He was still working all day, every day. Choctaw Indian, full blood. Fabulous sculptor. And after I left, he fell down and hit his head and died.
Oh, my gosh. Sorry to hear that.
But, I mean, I grew up around these kind of people. He was a friend of my mother's.
Yeah.
And had been her teacher at the museum in Houston.
So you had this very influential circle. I always think of the, you know, Andy Warhol warehouse art scene and people floating in and out. And you grew up in all that. You then go off. You get some formal training. And then do you enroll in art program in college and go somewhere else?
Well, no, I stayed in Huntsville. It was Sam Houston State mm-hmm. University. They probably still have a really fine art department. Not too big, but really wonderful skill teaching. And I stayed there and was out by the time I was 20, everyone assuming I would get my master's. And I said, no, I don't want to teach. I just want to make it. So I tried to get a job in Houston. No one would hire me. Just sweep the floors in the galleries. Mm-hmm. They knew me.
Yeah.
But they said, no, you don't have any experience. Mm. And I said, well, I think I do.
Right.
I grew up here in your gallery, and I can frame and sweep. But anyway, no one would hire me, so I opened a little gallery at the edge of the Jackson Heights, outside, across the bayou from the rich neighborhood, but not far from the gallery district.
Huh.
And the papers, the Houston Chronicle and Statesman, loved it. The art critic. I just wanted to support a studio.
Mm.
So I accidentally became an art dealer with a studio I didn't have time to get into. And then I married a musician, and then all of us, some years later, and got pregnant, and he wanted to come back to school up here in Austin. So I was happy to. I didn't mean to be an art dealer.
Yeah.
That's a whole different thing.
You were an entrepreneur. Opening up? Did they call it that? Did you see yourself as like a small business owner?
No. No. But the papers did, the critics did, and they really were interested in whoever I chose to show. Mm. I hardly showed myself. For one thing, my work was in the studio. I was considered that. And in the gossip column, and I was probably 22. But, you know, I didn't care about that. I just wanted to paint and then raise my baby.
And then you came to Austin.
Yep.
And growing up and during all that time, you're doing art. When you think about your home and, you know, kind of this Austin artist status, were you also collecting things or was it always just like producing, collecting? Mm-hmm. How else were you kind of expressing yourself creatively?
Cooking.
Okay.
Eating.
Yeah.
I'm a big cook because I'm a big eater.
I gotcha.
I'm the family cook. But really, I was always trying to find time to enjoy raising a child, and I became a single mother and also find time to do work that I liked.
Yeah.
And be involved in the galleries here. There were hardly any.
Yeah.
Austin was, but there were artists here. So I joined an arts group right away, and I'm still friends with those people.
Oh,
I saw one I hadn't seen in 35 years yesterday at lunch. So really, it was a wonderful place to be an artist. Austin, Texas was, but not a wonderful place to make money.
I think a lot of people would still.
It's still not.
Agree.
No, it's not. It
is tough. It's rough.
It never was.
And did you open up another gallery here in Austin, or you were done with that?
Well, actually, I forget. Yes, I did actually a little bit.
So again,
but briefly,
small business.
But I really did it just to have a studio downtown.
Okay.
I had a studio in the Driscoll.
Oh, wow.
Briefly for a couple of years in like the window.
I didn't even know that was the thing.
It was. Well, it wasn't. But I did do that. But no, I mainly just painted and had shows and was in exhibitions. And so, and I wasn't a portrait painter, but people wanted me to do that. So that's how I made a living and didn't have to work full time. I did unusual portraits with weird backgrounds. Weird.
We got to click on that. What? Tell me more about that. Tell me more about the weird art you were doing.
Well, and that was, I always had my own art going on with people, kind of like modern day mythology. And I might place people I knew on Enchanted Rock with something going on or a storm or something and playing games or animals. It was kind of modern mythology. So my portraits took on a character of mythology, like whatever the person seemed to be about, something would be going on in the background, or monkeys running away with a violin bow, or something was going on. And some of my paintings, my own paintings, not the commissioned work, would scare my clients. And they would say, oh, is our painting going to look like your work? And I said, oh, no. It won't. It's going to look like you. And it always did, because if I really painted them well, whatever was going on around them was them.
Mm.
And I didn't even, they said, well, do you want to see our house? Where? And I'd, no, I don't need to see your house. I just need, or maybe tell me your favorite tree. I am still doing those here and there. And I never said I was a portrait painter, but that's how I made money.
I feel like Shelley and I need a portrait you, with some really interesting stuff happening behind us.
There would be stuff going on.
Tell me, what's your favorite portrait that you've ever done, commissioned for someone else?
I will tell you, because it's a good story. And a woman in my neighborhood who died young, like 55 years old. Mm-hmm. But long before that, she was an architect and an anthropologist, and she commissioned me to paint her. She was going to make a big sculpture to plant the painting in, like a beautiful Italian-looking modern thing. And I was going to paint her on one side of the board and her husband on the other. So she was holding the Milky Way or a galaxy in her hand, and she was covered in wreaths of flowers that she had actually worn. We all wore wreaths of flowers at her 50th birthday. Hypatia. Her name is Hypatia. And Hypatia died. She got cancer and died. And it was my favorite portrait. It is my finest portrait. And it's small. Some of my portraits are 7 feet.
Wow.
Families. Big,
right,
huge.
Right.
Too big. And so her husband married one of her friends. And he said, this painting is making us sad. One of her close friends, would you take it back? I said, oh, well, it's your painting, but no, you have it.
Wow.
I said, okay.
Wow.
Strange. I still have it. I will always have it till I move on.
You're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast.
This is Shelley Neff, the founder of Weird Homes. The podcast today is brought to you by Austin's Energy Solar Incentives Program. Austin Energy's Solar Education Portal teaches you how solar energy can power your home. It's a great way to start the solar process if you don't know where to begin, and it guides customers through their installation process. What's also amazing is they are offering rebates. David and I put solar power on our roof a few years ago, and actually the loan to get them was less than our power bill. I mean, we've saved money doing it in the process. So it's such a smart thing to do. To find out how you can optimize your home's energy, go to austinenergy.com/go/solar101.
And what is your favorite painting that you've done for yourself, just, you know, created on your own?
I do have a favorite painting. I painted my daughter every few years, and she's 40 now. And one of them, she was coming of age, and it's jungle, and she's in a nightgown on a bench that was carved by Mexican indigenous people, a bench my mother had, and
wow.
I have now, full of animals, and it's I've painted that bench a lot too, but it is my favorite painting, and I'll always keep it near me. I have soul paintings of my daughter. Actually, most of them. I have soul my daughter. But this one is mine.
So your daughter doesn't have all these paintings of herself hanging in her house. That's not her thing.
No. I mean, what are you going to do with them all? But, you know, I had done one just for my mother, too, and she died in 2013. So I have that one. I have that one, too.
And so we talked a little bit about where these paintings are in your home. Your home is quite spectacular. Tell us a little bit about you're in Austin, and you stumble upon a dome home up in the hills. Well, someone grabs you and says, you must live here.
Well, no, actually, that's another good story. Mm. Because I raised my daughter. I bought a little cottage in Tarrytown, Austin, for nothing in like 78.
Oh, my gosh.
$20,000. Anyway, I had raised...
People just passed out in their cars listening to that.
Oh, my God. I know. I think $26,000. But it was just a two-bedroom old style house, and I needed more space, and I could hear Mopac at that point, and my daughter had gone away and gone to college and gone away, and I was like, I was thinking about moving into another part of Austin, having more space, and a friend of mine lied and kidnapped me. She said, let's go see your painter friend Bill Montgomery's show down the street at the Tarrytown Gallery. I said, okay, I've already seen it, but it's fabulous. Okay, I'll go again. She drove me all the way out to Cuernavaca in the hills. And there was a little sign in a front yard that said, for sale by owner.
Wow.
A tiny sign. And it had a phone number. She was curious about it. It was domes, multiple dome structures. I said, oh, Carmen, I had things to do. She said, well, I want to see this. So we called the number. We went in. I was stunned by the light. It was creepy. It needed all gutting and redoing and insulation, everything, kitchen. Everything needed to come out. It had gotten creepy over the years, built in 72. And this was 2000 or 99. And I said, oh, look at the light. There were 27 skylight panels and windows. And she walked out of there with me and said, oh, my God, look at your face. You are not buying that. That was disgusting. And I said, yes, I am.
So you weren't prepared to go look at this house. Your friend grabs you, takes you. You go through the house. You're like, this is creepy.
She thought it. Well, I mean, yes, it was. It was creepy.
A little dark, maybe.
Insulation was stained, and it needed to be.
But you come out, and the house reached out and grabbed your soul, and you said, yes, I'm going to buy this. Now, who built this house? Where did it come from? Did you find out any of the history?
Yes. Because I knew, not at that time, but I knew the ex-wife of the guy who built it. He's a musician and a concrete guy to this day in his 70s.
Wow.
Dean Stensmuehlen. And his wife was a famous glass artist who moved to L.A. 40 years ago, but she was a good friend of mine. And they divorced during the building of the first dome. They had a little boy, a baby. You could see out the front door sitting on the toilet. And she couldn't handle it. Well, they didn't get along, probably. So they divorced. But he kept building domes and adding. They get interconnected. Just walk through one and a maze of big rooms.
Yeah.
And he went on to build more domes with another buddy. I mean, there are a lot of domes around Austin, actually.
There are. And you know, I think of domes as high winds, earthquakes, sustainability. Like, why was he going around building all these domes in Austin, Texas? Was it like a 60s, 70s vibe?
Yeah, well, they were hippies.
Mm.
I don't know what they were doing at the end of each day when they sat down and planned. Yes, and they were musicians too, and yeah, domes. And he was a concrete guy. He still is.
Yeah.
He's real good with concrete, an artist, really. So it was kind of just a natural thing for Austin.
And you were like, I'll take it. You buy it.
Well,
and then what happened?
Well, I had an engineer. I was nervous. I was single at the time. And I had an engineer come, and he spent 6 hours crawling all over the place. And he said, lady, I don't know what you want with this thing, but it's a good structure. And if a tornado or a fire comes, I'm coming over here. And that is the truth. And I live in a fire-prone area. And I tell all my neighbors, you know, it's like California with cedars. And I said, come. If a tornado or a fire comes, just come over here. Here's the key. Just come in. Because really, that's a good thing.
And so what did you do? Did you change things around? You add a garden, a pool? How'd you kind of put your own touches on the house?
Well, first, it just needed to be gutted, scraped out all the old insulation and all the high ceiling. I mean, it was a lot of work, and I had a good friend help me do it. He's a contractor. I mean, I hired him. And we built closets, built laundry space, built the kitchen ourselves, took out the old kitchen. And then I started clearing parts of the land and later made a big, beautiful spiraling garden, round garden. Big vegetable garden, feeds everybody, and built a pizza oven, a cob oven, and a labyrinth. So the landscape just kept calling for different things. After I got the house livable, it still has problems and issues, but not severe. But it still always has some area I need to finish or, you know, something.
What do you think it is about your house that makes people think that's a little bizarre, a little weird? Is it just the domes? Is it everything outside of it?
It's everything. It's the art. It's the domes. It's round. It's real comforting light. It's real comforting at night, actually. I don't know. People like it. They like the energy there. In fact, people get out of their cars, sensitive people, you know, out there people, and say, oh, wow, what is going on here? Like, there's something about it. It's on top of a hill, and I really don't know what the thing is. But there's some kind of beautiful energy that was probably there. And if you're going to be like me, an artist in domes, you're going to believe in that stuff. You know, I mean,
people
feel that stuff when they get out of the car. So
yours is, you know, in our spectrum, is architecturally strange and then landscaped and just added on. And then you've got the portraits of people who've passed on and returned back to you, kind of going
the
on.
The dead people's paintings.
And then just talk to me about inspiration, right? I think we have a lot of, and I know there's no checklist, but I think we have a lot of people who listen to this show and they're looking for that inspiration. So what kind of inspires you to go home and create something or change something or build something? What kind of comes to you out of the universe that makes you go home and do that?
I've always thought you have one chance with the life you're living. And I think maybe some people are born with the need to do that. It might be something you're born with, but it's certainly you can develop it. And I tell people, so they say, oh, I want to be an artist, or what's it like to be? I said, well, it's really, art is just a way of life. Mm. It touches everything I see or do. It's a sort of a spiritual connection to nature or something. But it's not just about the paintings and wanting to produce them. It's just that I cannot help but wanting to create beauty. I cannot help it. And so you have to give yourself time to do it in freedom. Once you start, usually you can't stop. So you just have to get started. A friend of mine who hasn't done it in 40, 50 years in Boston is worried. She wants to get back into it. She said, I don't know where to start. You can't go wrong. Take a class.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong. You know, just don't have any expectations. And I'm right now painting cows still, and more cows to come. Hindu cows for some lovely Hindu people that live here that were born in India. And that is a whole new, opened up a whole new area for me, studying all those gods, all those symbols, all the iconography, how far back in their history it goes, how many versions of each god. I mean, it's crazy. But they're very colorful, beautiful, natural images that have gone on to these 3D cows. And it really is going to add to who I am as a person. It was a gift to me, even though they hired me. They don't, well, maybe they realize, but. It really was. It's just a gift, you know, to leave something behind.
And tell me, so that's the advice on the, I want to be an artist. I'm trying to understand how to be more creative. Flip that around and give me the advice for that person listening who's like, I don't know if I'm ready to live in a dome home, but I need to change something. I don't want just this beige box where I don't change any of the paint and everything looks the same. But I think they have that same problem. They have that, like, well, do I just go buy an antique chair and put it in the corner and see if I like it? Like, how do they, what's your advice on how somebody changes their home?
I think realistically, you can go buy a weird home, you know. And my father, actually, when I was buying that little cottage a long time ago, he said, you know, Katie, you might someday want to sell that. He died in 85. He said, but you might someday want to sell that. I can see you in some different kind of home. And he said, but you know, you might want to build it or whatever. And he had said that to me one time, but really, if I hadn't found the home that I did, I think you just start with something small. You know, you start with a room, you know, you make something, or you cut it up, the room up, and divide it into, you know, areas for, well, I don't know, meditation, whatever you do. You just start out, and it just keeps getting added onto until it's out of control. But you don't have to take on enormous projects. And if you're shy about it and feel safe with beige, you might want to think about that. There's therapy for that. There are good doctors here. And I mean, because, you know, some people are afraid.
Yes.
Of, it doesn't have to be strong color, but they're just afraid of change.
Let's push them a little.
It's a natural trait. But now I've lived in round structures all these years. I cannot imagine living in a square room. I hope I never have to. I hope I keel over in those domes. Because round is better.
I love it.
It is.
I love it. Before we go, tell me, where can people go see your art? Do you have shows coming up? Anything else where they can kind of get in contact with you?
Well, the next thing for me is to, in September, to have an open studio to see these amazing cows before they're shipped off to India. That once the people saw them, she went and got a house in India to put them in.
Oh my
Even
God.
They were going to Rollingwood. But she said, oh, right. No. And she said, these are never going outside. But they're actually, I made them to be coated and they could go outside.
Wow.
So and in September, I'm going to have an open studio. And if anybody's interested, they can send me their information through Katie Nail Art, KatyNailArt, KatieNailArt.com. When I have the thing in September or October, but probably in September. That's the next thing that I know of. And if anybody's interested in my art, I have lots of it. I can show people if they're interested in my art.
I love it. And I'll tell you, we love Katie. We love her home. We love her art. We'll make sure that everyone listening to this sign up on that. Maybe we'll all meet out there, have a glass of wine, and enjoy the art. That sounds like a really good time. Thank you so much for your time today. This is David J. Neff, and this is the Weird Homes Podcast. We'd love for you today to go check out our website at weirdhomestour.com. You can find the new coffee table book that features all the homes that you're hearing about on the podcast. We'd also love for you to check out our Instagram, Weird Homes Tour. And finally, really, we want this podcast to inspire you to show that design has no boundaries and that we would rather have neighbors be strange than be strangers.